Missing this?
I remember Ollie texted me Solskjaer. One or two people would get hold of my number, unfortunately, and he would text me.
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
Have you seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course he would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course I want to play at the weekend.
Hello there. You're very welcome along to Golf Weekly. There is much to discuss. There's a new world number one. We have a full house today. Nathan Murphy, fresh from calling Liverpool's trophy lift last night. Hello to you.
So fresh right now.
We have Fionn Davenport. Hello.
Hey, Joe.
Word is out that in the greater Manchester area, there is a gentleman in his early 50s shooting in the 70s at the moment.
Wow. Yes, I've been playing particularly well. I shot a 78 gross the other day and then followed it up with an 81. So, you know,
very nice.
It was all good. I got a golf lesson, simple things. And I feel confident. And as we all know, when you believe you can play well, it really can help you play well. So
stick to the process.
I'm sticking with the process.
One shot at
now, clearly I'm playing in the medal on Saturday. So I'm going to hand in a card with 110 on it or something. So, you know, obviously.
Peter Lawrie from Spawell Driving Range. Hello to you.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
How's the form? How are you?
Form is good. I actually played golf yesterday. Shock and horror.
Ooh.
Did you shoot in the 70s or the 80s?
No comment.
Oh. Whoa, no.
Where did you play?
I played in Port Marnock. I had myself, Brendan McDade from here, David Keating and Keith O'Connor. We played a little four ball and the young guys beat the old guys. So.
So it was you and Brendan McDade against the two boys?
No, it was myself and Keith against the two boys.
Oh, right.
Against the two old pros.
Okay.
And how did you play?
So, you know what they say about people who play, they can play, and people who can teach, they can teach. But you can't play and teach at the same time. So there you go. No, I let Keith do all the playing. Yeah. I came in when required. It was nice to get out for a change.
Give me a bit more detail, will you? Did you drive the ball?
No details. I made a couple of birdies, which was okay.
Has this affected your thoughts on whether you're going to go on the senior tour?
What senior tour right now?
No.
So
a few years away, yes.
We wait and see, yeah. But okay. I got news that we're going to be here for a little bit longer, so that's good. So Spawa will be open for another good few years. Well, another at least three more years. So
that's great. Yeah.
So what does that mean? The Dubs are stepping back their
I don't know what they're going to do, but at this moment in time, they're holding off any plans. We have been given until 2023. At least. So the driving range will be here for everybody to hit balls until then.
Great. Very good. Very good. Good man. Yeah. So there's lots of tweets in. A lot of love for Peter Lawrie on the tweets this week.
It's great, isn't it?
I don't like it. P.O. Murphy. Just listened to last week's pod. Boom. John Rahm. What's this week's winner, Peter? I could do with a few Bob, says P.O. Murphy.
Wow. Stop clocking all that.
Does money make you happy?
I wouldn't know.
The Irish 49 million winner was pretty happy with his €2.50 quick pick. I know he actually picked the numbers, didn't they? They picked the numbers for €2.50 and the Euro Millions.
49 million. Nathan, would you give up your job?
Nah.
Nathan,
buy the radio station.
If Nathan, if Nathan won 4.9 million, he'd be like, see ya.
4.9 million would be a tricky amount, I think, wouldn't it?
Well, there's that
4.9 million is in that spot of you're very rich, but are you rich enough to go through the next 50 years of your life living the life of a multimillionaire, but without getting bored?
Well, there's that great scene in Succession where Cousin Jim reassures the two brothers. He's like, no, I'm okay. I'm okay because I'm going to inherit 5 million when you know, guys. And they both look at them and they're like, oh my God, no. Oh, we're so sorry. And Jim's like, what? It's 5 million. And they say that exact thing. Not worth your while to work, but equally, you got to watch the pennies. You're a prisoner.
You're a prisoner of the money. Speaking of Succession, I don't know if any of you have caught that Rise of the Murdochs on BBC that's been going for the last couple of weeks. And the writers of Succession, I mean, we know that Succession is based on the Murdochs, but how closely it chimes with the Murdochs is really quite something.
Really?
Yeah. Very close.
Murdoch and his son have a big Shakespearean war.
Yeah, well, so Lachlan and James Murdoch. James was the one who had the rap label and was the kind of the black sheep of the family, and was eventually brought in by his father to run, was it B-Sky B? And much to the alarm of the board and everybody else who had knowledge going, like, he's clearly not the best candidate for it. Lachlan is just a charmer, and the one with the brains and the charm is Elizabeth, but she ended up marrying the grandson of Lucian Freud, who was deeply opposed to the Murdoch. So there's loads going on. I'm still to watch the third episode, but it's absolutely brilliant.
I did go down a brief tangent, Peter, when I thought the same thing about the 49 million. There's the famous study from 1978, University of Massachusetts. Does winning the lotto make you happier?
Just off the top of your head there, Joe.
I went straight in. Does it make you happier? Yeah, no, I'm most certainly reading. So what they did, they got a bunch of lotto winners and they got a bunch of people who around the same time had been paralyzed. And they asked them on a regular basis how much pleasure they got from watching TV, small activities, seeing a friend, eating breakfast, laughing at a joke, etc. And they found that the recent accident victims were just as happy, if not happier, than the lottery winners. Now, I've always thought that was nonsense. So I checked a more recent study done by the Stockholm University and New York University. And what they have said is, if you win the lotto, your life satisfaction does go up. Your life satisfaction goes up, but your general day-to-day happiness does not go up. So you still get angry in traffic. You still watch TV and get bored. You still are annoyed by your mother-in-law, etc. That kind of stuff, you know, all the typical annoyances in life. But your overall sense of satisfaction is higher when you sit down or when you're lying in bed at night. So winning the lottery is still good, is the point I'm making.
Mm. How much money did you have on John Ram?
Not enough. Pat Kelly, some prediction from Peter. Some prediction? For God's sake. Oh, Peter, how did you predict we're impending world number one? Come on. Some prediction from Peter Laurie. Can we get a prediction every week? Yeah, let's do that. Let's see how that goes.
Okay.
Andrew Davies, I was listening to the pod early on Sunday, impressed to say the least when I heard Peter identify John Ram as his pick for Memorial. Dot O'Gorman, you called it, Peter, and then Dot, just to make me like you even less, you added, not even Joe or Nathan would get a 10 on a par 5.
Well.
Yes, we would, Dot. Yes, we would.
And many more.
John O, then, Peter predicted in the pod that we were going to see DeChambeau hitting some crazy places when things go wrong. He also tipped John Ram for the tournament, which is looking good with one round to play. Maybe now the other lads might go easy on Peter.
This is a love fest, isn't it? I really like this. We keep this one up, will we?
He's a complete bluffer, Jono.
You know, sometimes when you log on Twitter and you see a load of notifications and you think, uh-oh, something terrible has happened. That's what happened on Sunday night when I logged on to the Golf Weekly account. I was like, oh, this can't be good. I didn't realize just how bad it was. Everybody is praising Peter.
It's worse than we could have imagined.
Yeah, it's just shocking, lads. Sure, shocking.
Chris Murphy sent a lovely picture of McCredden Golf, I think, down in Wicklow. Paul McGinley designed. He tweeted Paul McGinley as well. Won't get much better than this on a Sunday morning. It did look very nice. Stephen makes a point we may come to. Dave McIntyre was making this point with us over the weekend as well on the pay-per-view. Bryson is a beacon amongst the most bland and boring sports people on the planet.
You've omitted the two listeners who weren't happy with me asking Tom Watson about cutting.
I have them here.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Oh, we're coming.
Oh, okay.
We'll get to Westcott free.
Give me a minute here. I was as busy showering Peter in love, which will never happen again, ever.
No.
We have the great Tom Watson on for 15 minutes, and you ask him about cutting. I thought this was a, in capital letters, golf podcast. Seriously, not good enough, said Anto. I thought it was an interesting question. I like the point with all this stuff is...
Well, Anto, I mean, Tom Watson, the man, and what he's into, the things that fuel his desire today, and he's so competitive with this stuff. So I thought that was interesting. Also, as well as this, there was the slightly unfortunate problem with the tech issues, so that it kind of, the interview kind of ends with this, and you're like, oh, all right. Because we did actually return to golf almost immediately and pursued some golf-related questions for the rest of the interview. So it does give the impression that you're like, okay, quick, time's up. Oh, let me ask you about
my Wi-Fi went, which was not ideal. Yeah. I mean, it's the dilemma.
The gods of Phil Mickelson went.
Yeah. That's
so it. Somebody also said it was terrible that I asked him about that and that Tom the gent wouldn't engage.
No.
Equally, somebody else said, why don't you go harder on him? You should have asked him about picking Webb Simpson. Horrific decision. Watson, disgrace in that Ryder Cup captaincy. So, I mean, there's never a balance. On the asking him about cutting thing, it's a dilemma you always have when you're interviewing a big name in that. Anto, if you Google Tom Watson golf, you will find Tom Watson answering questions and doing interviews about every aspect of golf ever. Like the Open Chronicles. We got him to tell that story about Jack Ringenham after Turnberry in 2009, which was a great story. And his Nicholas impression was pretty good.
But it was very good, wasn't it?
It's straight ripped off the Open Chronicles, which we've all probably seen a half a dozen times. So I thought the cutting question is good because his fiance says you get to the man. And I haven't heard him talk about it 20 gazillion times. That is always the dilemma. Like, we had Roy Keane on last year, Nathan. We're like, do we ask him about not liking Ferguson? Do we ask him about Saipan? He's only done it a gazillion times elsewhere. And in the modern world, that's at our fingertips on a laptop. So it's them every time.
And I think Americans are a lot more polished than Irish when it comes to interviews. So therefore, with Harrington, we often have that question with Harrington. Like, we speak to Harrington so often. What can you ask him that's new? Though, like, funny enough, like, Phil, you asked him about the Open and Sergio, and he's given that answer in a way a million times, but he gave it in a totally different way with loads of different analysis that I'd never heard before. And likewise, that night with Roy Keane, he spoke about a lot of the same stuff, but with little insults added in for
for added measure,
which was brilliant. I don't know. We're probably delve into our process around interviews a bit too much, but like the not good enough. I'm sorry. Like, you don't pay for this.
No, lads, I actually think...
A full refund coming your way, Anto.
Yeah. I actually think as a golfer, it is nice to know what goes on in the background of another professional golfer, of what they're doing and how they... Like, what does Jack Nicklaus do? What does Gary Player do? What does...
press ups.
Well, there you go. Yes, yeah, sit ups or whatever. But he doesn't. He.
Yeah.
You know, if you win a tournament, Gary Player sends you a letter of congratulations.
He's
the only kind of top player to have ever gone on and kept up with this idea that he had.
I think, like as Joe said, like when you're doing some reading, just look. I mean, how often would you get a chance to interview Tom Watson? And so, you know, you see all the stuff that, you know, you about Turnberry and the Jewel in the Sun and all the rest of it. And then what I found, and I wouldn't have been the biggest Tom Watson fan beforehand. He comes across as someone described him, a very hard man. And the more I read about him, the more I realized, away from the golf course, this is a really interesting guy who has this wide range of interests that he's very good at. Like, he's a brilliant photographer. Like, I mean, and this cutting stuff, again, it just speaks to the, like, when he retired from competitive golf, his competitive fire doesn't die. So what does he turn it to? And the fact that his wife introduced him to it and they did it together. and that he's become super competitive with this. I just thought this was such an intro. Anyway, I am not defending me asking the question. I'm explaining it, but as they say, when you're... Yeah. Oh, anyway, I'm sorry that the Wi-Fi dropped because it was actually very interesting to talk to him for the entire time.
Yeah. Shocking question, Anthony. You're dead right. I agree.
Look, I don't know. We probably end up doing a lot of these interviews, Joe, where somebody says you have 15 minutes with someone and it's an impossibility. Like Tom Watson will be very near the top of the list of people we would love to have spoken to. Yeah. You can't say, Tom, and we've got 18 minutes here. And let's be honest, we've heard all the stories about Jack Nicklaus before. So skip all them. Give us something new. Then you ask for something new that's slightly different. And people are like, well, just go through the old stories. Like it's very hard to guess. And I'm not defending, I don't overly care if people thought there should be more or less in the interview. Like it's 18 minutes with one of the legends of the game. You're never going to get what we would want out of it, which is, you know, a Harrington style hour and a half sitting there and you can shoot the breeze a little bit.
Also, it's worth pointing out that Joe, you managed to get out of him what absolutely must be an exclusive that Mickelson rang him last year to apologize.
Yeah, but you know, even that, he didn't want to engage on that. And
that's fine. But he did.
I should have machined him, done with him a couple of more questions. Like the obvious thing, it hit me afterwards, but it's hard when you're in the moment, was to ask, did you feel he owed you an apology? But I still don't think he wanted to get into it, so it probably wouldn't have worked. Look, it was 15 minutes. It's going to be what it's going to be. Because Dave McIntyre texted, and this is, you know, on the back of Harrington, where we have like an hour and a half with him. If you take the worst 15 minutes of Harrington, you'd be like, what the hell was that? So Dave said, Tom Watson, amazing. And I said, no, it's a 15-minute job. And he was like, oh, okay. Because, you know what that's going to be.
Yeah.
Bum, 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 and you don't get very far. Anyway. Look, it wasn't great. It wasn't. If we were doing Tom Watson, we wouldn't choose to do it in 15 minutes rushed. I was reading, by the way, the Michael Bamberger book before we get into Muirfield. It's not a... if you haven't read the Benedict Cataian one, that's still the one.
Yeah, I agree.
Still very enjoyable. I still got so into Bamberger.
Do you think it's a good companion piece for it?
Great companion piece. It struck me as more of like a 10,000 word long form piece you might read on a website as opposed to a book.
Absolutely.
That's the kind of brutal summary. But I mean, I still loved it. Like just, you can't get enough of somebody as smart as Bamberger just giving his thoughts in Woods. And I got so into it, and this is a bit grim, but last night I watched 3 hours of the final round of the 2019 Masters again, which is there in high def on YouTube. Man, there is a period where Woods gets lucky. Really lucky. So on the 8th, par 5, goes way right, avoids a bunker and has just enough of a gap of a tree, makes birdie there. The 9th pulls his iron shot really badly onto the green and this is the really long downhill putt he has to make. It's an amazing putt, so that's not so bad, the 9th. But then 10th, 3 wood, way right, has to chip out sideways, makes bogey. 11th, way right, ends up in that gully. You know that gully he always seems to end up in down towards the bottom of the green. And then obviously the 12th happens and that's where the tournament spins. But then you go 13th, where he's on a run here of I don't know how many bad drives, and he hooks it left and hits off the tree and lands back in the fairway.
Yeah.
So in those 6 holes, or the 12th, he was clawing on by his fingernails. And yet you kind of remember it as a bit of a procession. Oh, to be fair, he played brilliantly from the 13th fairway on, but Peter, you need luck to win. You need lots of luck to win.
Certainly do. But when your name is on the trophy, your name is on the trophy no matter what happens. So other guys fall away and you just seem to climb up that leaderboard.
One of the more interesting things in the book, and you can see it afterwards on the 18th, is that Finau, who's like 29 or 28 years old, when he hugs Woods on the green, turns to Woods and says, I'm so proud of you.
I know. really? What are you? What? Why?
It's like
Tony. Yeah. What a curious thing.
It was interesting.
What a curious thing to say.
Bamberger,
for a young man,
calls Finau an old soul. But I mean, could you imagine us? We're older than Finau. Could you imagine turning to Tiger saying, "I'm proud of you, Tiger"?
Oh, yeah.
So, John Rahm, world number one, Nathan.
Well, we all expected this, I think you'll find if you listen back to last week's podcast. Yeah, geez, he was good, wasn't he? Like, this was, felt like a US Open. It felt like Jack Nicklaus, in some ways, was maybe trying to prove a point with the way they toughened up the course over the weekend. And Rahm, even though he only ended up winning by, was it three in the end with the two-shot penalty? Like, he had, just like, Liverpool winning the title. He had won from so far out. Nothing that really happened in the back nine matters. There was a moment as the weather started to get really bad around six, seven holes in where you're thinking, oh, maybe this could get horrifically bad, that this is going to be one of the great blow-ups. And it's such a terrible thing when you're watching golf. All you want is the drama. So I, much as I love John Rahm and love watching John Rahm, you would, and even then when he has a seven-shot lead and he's losing his temper, you're thinking, God, imagine if this gets down to one shot. What is he going to be like? What is he going to be like? But yeah, it's just been, geez, it's been a stunning rise. With all the pressure as well, because everyone expected him to be great. Everyone thought this guy is going to be a top five, potentially a world number one. So to have that in his shoulders and to just go and power on. And like, his journey obviously hasn't been an easy one. We've spoken before about going to America, little or no English at the time. And in the space of 5-6 years, what he's done is, yeah, it's unbelievable. And has shown he can win on every type of golf course is the other thing. He doesn't have a major. You assume, as difficult as it is in golf, that he's going to win one very soon. But he could win any of them. Like, he has the game. He's clearly got the game when you see what he can do in links courses here in Ireland. He clearly has the game to win all four of them.
Mm. Peter, tell us about your guy.
No, well, I wouldn't have said he was my guy, but he was a pick that I thought was a good week for a good person for the week of the tournament. I would agree with Nathan. He does have the game to win pretty much anywhere, and he does have the drive and the desire. And, you know, just those put on the blinkers and win a golf tournament. Disappointed a little bit. The one on 16 kind of put a bit of sour taste in my mouth, I have to admit. And it was a very hard one to call, really, you know what I mean? But you'd love to see the opposite way around of calling the penalty on himself, maybe, or something like that. But
I would, he saw the ball moving? I would presume he didn't, because he had no idea.
Absolutely, he would have had no... Well, I don't know whether he would have had no idea, but that's a hard one to say, because you, in that kind of rough, you'd be very careful of where you put the ball behind the club. Hmm. Or, sorry, the club behind the ball. To me, if I was playing that shot, I would be very, very careful of where the club goes. And we watch other golfers, and they seem to be able to get in there with the club right behind the ball and not worry about the ball moving. And that's only a personal thing for me, and probably some other golfers that would be very concerned about where the club goes.
And you didn't have to be concerned enough.
I just didn't feel that when you see it in slow motion, you see the club going... It goes very close to the ball, real fluffy lies. And I'm not saying, and I'm certainly not hinting at anything here at all, but it's just a personal preference. If I was teaching somebody to play golf and you were out on a literally playing a few holes with them and teaching them, you would say, now, remember, you know, if you put the club too close to the ball and the ball moves, that's a penalty. And that's what you would teach people to do. So you certainly wouldn't teach them to put the club that close to the ball.
He didn't improve his lie in any great way from what I could see.
No, and he played a spectacular golf shot. You know, he pitched it inch perfect in the first cut in the semi for the ball to release very, very softly into the hole.
You said it soured.
The lie didn't improve. It just very, very slightly to me.
Yeah. Anyone else agree?
His defense was that the entire time he had his eye on the target. So he wasn't looking. I think it was an interesting one. Brandel Chambly was asked on Twitter, had Rahm's lead been won And he was then, you know, given a two-shot penalty that meant he lost the tournament. He was asked, what do you think would have happened? And he goes, John Rahm would have argued vehemently and convincingly, and they wouldn't have penalized him the two shots. That the PGA, or that they would have decided, yeah, no, it was an honest thing. Didn't improve his lie. And so Chambly suggesting that the circumstances, i.e., that even a two-shot penalty didn't affect the outcome of the tournament, that Rahm was going to win it, that was the reason why they ultimately penalized him the two shots, rather than because the foul was so blatant. I don't know.
It is the difficulty with HD, that when you zoom in with HD, it suddenly looks like more of a movement than there actually is. And I saw some photographs of the ball before and the ball after, and you're looking at them going, what's the difference?
It is
that minuscule a change. So like, maybe the bigger point of what Peter's saying is that, like, if that's the way he sets himself up for those shots, he's always going to have that risk of coming down the stretch in a major when, again, all those HD cameras are on you, that it's a risk you don't really need to take.
And you should be, Peter, you're right. I mean, you should be looking. Like, you're an experienced golfer, and if the ball is sitting in fluffy rough and you put the club head behind, you've played enough golf to know that there is a possibility that you might, that the ball might move in that rough. I know that, you know.
Well, let's go back to Brian Davis. This is the one that gets me. Brian Davis, he was it in a playoff or maybe the 72nd hole? He missed the green left. He gets into the bunker and he hits it out. He's going to win his first ever tournament in US soil. And he calls a penalty on himself because he tipped two blades of sand or two grains of sand on his backswing. Nobody could have even seen that. Even high definition where he was didn't see it. So my point is, you have to be very, very careful, as Nathan would say, with the cameras that close to you. You have to be very careful of where you put the club down and is the ball going to move or not. And in that kind of fluffy rough, yes, you have every chance of the ball moving.
Is there a distinct, is there a possibility that the rules of golf might be amended as follows? In the era of high-def television and 57 camera angles and being able to see the thing right up close, that much like VAR in football, if the movement of the ball improved the lie, then penalty. If it didn't do any different and it was deemed accidental or certainly not deliberate, then you leave it as it is. You know what I mean? Like, is there really, like, surely the rules of golf can be summarized as follows. It's like, don't do anything that improves your lie. Hit the ball as it, you know, and that's it. Just go. Like, you know, don't give yourself an unfair advantage.
Yeah.
Because, like, the obvious point that can be made is how many other players did the exact same thing on Sunday?
Yeah. Well, that's what Brandon Chambly said.
Camera zoomed in on them, exactly. So is there an unfairness? And maybe here, that's what goes with being in contention and the money that's on offer and all of that.
But rules are rules and they should be applied across the board.
He'd never admit it, I'm sure. And maybe it's the honour of 7, 8 years later that Peter Lawrie is still talking about Brian Davis' sportsmanship. But, as you say, it was a couple of grains of sand. And it cost him winning the tournament. And he never won a tournament on the PGA Tour. But yay for sportsmanship.
I take your point.
I guess the alternative is your Simon Dyson, maybe. And people are still talking about you years later in a way that you really don't want them to be talking about you.
Yeah.
Peter Lawrie still talks about him all the time. Everyone else has let it go.
Simon who? Isn't that the guy who invented the Hoover?
He cost me a few quid, I can tell you.
No, I get it. Look, it's serious and golf is self-regulated. And so if people start messing with or playing even a touch loose with the rules, then the whole thing goes kaput. But it struck me as honest. Careless, I take your point. Look, if you're in fluffy lie, you know that touching the grass can have an effect on the ball 3, 4, even 2 inches ahead of you. So in that respect, he was careless. And I... benefit of the doubt, maybe he was so consumed with the difficulty of this shot that he wasn't he was not thinking to himself, I suspect, if I can just nudge this a little bit, it'll make the shot any easier, because it didn't. And it was such a crucial moment in the tournament. I'd say he was so gripped by the moment, which was crucial, and Ryan Palmer was on the green, that he maybe was a touch careless. But I mean, you look at the ball before and after, all those blades of grass are still right in front of the ball. Like, that is still just every bit as difficult. So maybe a rule infraction, yes, but I, for me, just about in keeping with the spirit. I don't think he in any conscious way, the way Patrick Reed in the sand, you know, that mound of sand, and that improved things for Reed, even though he claims his innocence. I don't think Ram looked to improve the situation, and he would have known the cameras would have been zoomed in on that lie, and there was, you know, full attention on that moment. I'd be amazed if, with the few shots lead, he would have thought, this is the time I flush my reputation down the toilet. So
he also didn't say afterwards, he goes, ugh, I got another garbage ruling as always.
Yeah. Well, so that's Ram world number one. And by the way, on a related note, we've got a brilliant prize for you this week. So this will not take much effort on your part. And the prize is very nice. Obviously, travel restrictions very much affected by COVID-19. The team at Fairways and Fun Days have put together some brilliant golf staycation deals. It's in conjunction with their golf and hotel partners. Suits all budgets, requirements. They have packages along the lines of two nights at a four-star hotel, breakfast in the morning, three rounds of golf at some of Ireland's best courses, four-course meal on an evening of your choice, welcome drink on arrival, and a prize pack as well for your stay. You can check out all the packages at fairwaysandfundays.com, where they lay out all the packages on offer. So, Golf Weekly listeners, there is a prize on offer to one of you. It's a four-ball at Mount Juliet, and a €100 Fairways and Fun Days golf staycation voucher. So four ball at Mount Juliet and a €100 voucher as well. All you have to do is tweet at Golf Weekly OTB and also include at Fairways Fun Days. So at Fairways Fun Days, and tell us who is the current Irish Open champion. So who is the current Irish Open champion? At Golf Weekly OTB, at Fairways Fun Days, and tell us who the Irish Open champion is. Peter, were you a fan of the golf course setup? What Jack did with the rough and the speed of the greens and the firm, fast fairways, etc.?
Yeah, I was really impressed. It drove a certain Bryson to distraction, which was good, and drove many other players there as well. If you look at it, like Matt Fitzpatrick came through the field there, and you know, his game is very suited to those style of golf courses where straight iron play has to be absolutely spot on. Around the greens, you have to be, you know, really top of your game, and then you have to putt really well. And you have to putt with aggression rather than you can't be worried too much about, you know, from 4 feet, leaving yourself another 4 footer. You have to be a confident putter. And those type of golf courses are really, I think, the way forward. And I found it hard to believe that he's digging up the whole golf course and actually going to make it probably better the minute the tournament was finished. Like, we saw video footage there of the sixth green being whipped up whilst they were still playing the golf course. So, look, I'm really impressed with the golf course. It's true to Jack Nicklaus' style and ethos of how to play the game. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't subject that other tournaments are not played that way. The other tournaments are wide open fairways, very little rough, and, you know, long style golf courses.
Tiger was asked about the course, and he was of the opinion that it was very tough. And he did actually, I mean, it was like he was doing an impersonation of Conor Moore. He did say conditions were really tough out there, but he didn't say the course was over the edge. And then there was Phil Mickelson.
Oh my God.
Putting from 77 yards.
Yeah.
And certainly in the Sky studio, Nick Daugherty, and he wouldn't just spit it out, and Andrew Coulthart were talking about it. And what Daugherty, I thought, was getting at in his questioning to Coulthart was, what he wanted to just say was, is this Phil protesting? Is this Phil saying the course setup is too tough? And he's making a, he's almost saying, look what you've reduced me to. It's like Jose Mourinho, you know, not filling his subs bench to say to the look, I've got no players, that kind of a protest. And they were hinting at it without committing to it. And then it went to the Mickelson interview, and he, in an absolutely sincere way, said, no, look, pin was tucked away in the left. There was no way of getting at it. The fairway, particularly getting close to the green, slopes right to left. It was the best way, if you start that ball rolling, use the momentum from the green, and that's how you get at the pin. He's one of the best wedge players in the world. Putting from 77 yards, a shot he's never practiced. He was absolutely sincere, and he complimented the course. But I don't know, Nathan. I could definitely see why Doherty and Coulthard's first instinct was, is this another US Open moment?
Well, firstly, we'll apologise to Nick Doherty, because you're doing the reverse Matt Doherty on Nick Doherty by going with the Irish pronunciation of the English name.
I can't bring myself to do like, it.
Our English listeners are going to be getting outraged. Typical Irish. Why can't they pronounce our surnames correctly?
Is there a C in Doherty, in Nick Doherty's name? I feel like he said Doherty.
It is Doherty. It's Doherty.
I said Doherty.
You said Doherty. It's Doherty.
Look, it's a curious surname. Nobody can get it right.
I never pronounce Brooks' second name.
that's fairly straightforward, Peter.
The all-time top of the list is Kenny Cunningham, who still can't say Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
What is that?
He calls him Solskjaer.
Solskjaer.
Anyway.
I don't know. I think on the Phil, like last week is a good example of the importance of good PR, because I think John Rahm lost his temper a few times and nobody had a great issue with it. Phil, again, as you say, is he sort of protesting in his real smart arsery kind of way, but because it's Phil and everyone loves Phil, he sort of gets away with it. And oh, maybe Phil has a point. Rather than if either of those were Bryson DeChambeau, he would be getting absolutely hammered, as he did correctly on Friday night.
There was a touch of logic to the shot Mickelson played. Like, maybe if he just bumped it in there with a 9-iron or something that way. Are you shaking your head, Peter? Do you think this was a protest?
No, he was a petulant child.
But he couldn't back it up then, because he may have gone after Tom Watson. You can't go after Jack Nicklaus.
Yeah, but he was being a petulant child. He wasn't going to win the tournament, so I'm going to make a statement here that, you know, this is ridiculous. Why did the leaders hit it straight at the flag? Okay, both of them pulled it, but like, why didn't they go out to the right if that was the play? You know, golfers are like sheep. You know, if there's a certain play to be played, we all do it. And, you know, we figure out which way is the best way to play it. Mickelson, in my opinion, was acting like a petulant child, as in, this is too tough for me, so I'm going to make a statement here. I'm going to chip it over here and put it from here so everybody will talk about it.
Well, there's two holes really in question here. There's the 13th, where he putted from 78 yards. And then there's the layup on the 16th, the par 3.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so on the 13th, what I didn't understand is that, so obviously he took the putter from that distance, and it's a low percentage shot across, but he didn't get it on the green and then hit. Did you see the lob that he hit? He hit it to like tap in.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. And so it's like, but you can do that from 70. You're one of the, as you said, you're one of the best wedge players in the game. His layup on the par 3 16th, again, raised a lot of eyebrows. But as he said afterwards, he goes, he'd played it 8 times and he was 10 over. Like he just admits, this is too hard a hole for me. I think he made 4 or 5 doubles, he said. So he took the double bogey out of play and just played it for a 4 for a
when you're completely out of the tournament and there's no.
Yeah, and you can do that because that's Mickelson does that. It's a bit like the moving putt. Remember that one? Like all of that.
Yeah,
Mickelson has these little moments of just irascible behavior and where he just gets a little petulant, and that's who he is. You know?
No, true. Oh, sorry, when I say when he was out of the tournament, I mean that makes it less explicable. If he had a 2 or 3 shot lead and laid up, I'd say, okay, quirky but weird. But when you're like 8 over, it doesn't matter. You might as well hit the ball at the green. So, yeah. But
does he have a point? Like, because I know, Peter, you're saying you love the course setup. The one argument I saw against it was that the rough was too punishing, which means there's no opportunity for creativity from the rough. All you got to do is get it out of there. And for a player like Phil, who, when he finds himself in the rough, it is never going to be the straightest hitter, and is never going to be Matt Fitzpatrick, that it takes out a huge part of his game and a really entertaining part of the game for most people. Because if you're in the rough, all you can do is either hammer it out to the fairway or just aim for the green and hope for the best, and it's going to run off the edge.
Yeah. I think the way they took away the flags and stuff like that made it hitting it out of the rough virtually impossible.
Yeah,
because they had to play to a certain distance. But look at Tony Fenu, who was well up the leaderboard coming, you know, on Saturday. And, you know, he hit it from the rough most of Thursday, Friday and Saturday and was still up the leaderboard. Mm. So maybe not.
The Sunday, 74 players on the Sunday, only four of them were under par. Six right. others played level. Everyone else was over par.
I know a lot of people loved it. I didn't love the course setup. It was just a touch too much for me. Now, I can't work out if it had been John Rahm and Rory McIlroy down the back nine as opposed to Ryan Palmer, with all due respect. I mean, who cares, you know? But I couldn't get into it as much as the previous week.
Well, that's the thing. It was one of the best tournaments in one way, but it was the dullest tournament so far in terms of finale since golf restarted.
Yeah, it was a bit.
All the excitement finished on the Friday. That was DeChambeau stuff.
So you just wish Phil had backed it up and said it afterwards, because we're trying to second guess. And it's interesting, Peter, and I definitely felt Nick Doherty and Andrew Coulthard were all of the opinion, this is petulance.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
and just to be clear, listeners, if Phil Mickelson comes on Golf Weekly for 15 minutes, it'll be Phil. How are you such a good guy?
Yeah.
How are you such a good legend. Guy? Sorry, how could anyone else be such a good guy?
Can I just
you're
say,
one of the best tippers ever.
Finally, someone called it out.
Sorry. Yeah. I still love him. He's still like my favorite golfer.
Stuff and you're like, nah.
Does he wear the coolest sunglasses of any golfer in the history of the game? The answer is yes.
He puts his coffee on the green when he's putting, which I am now going to start doing. I'm fond of a coffee in an early morning round. I would never dream of putting it on the green. Oh my God, he's just brilliant.
Like, we got to get him on the show. We got to get Harrington to get us his mobile number.
Yeah,
absolutely.
If Phil comes on, it will be nothing but love for his good parts on bad. So look, you said you can't do anything out of the rough. Bryson DeChambeau begs to differ. 240 yards. No. For a start, Peter, I would say it's not possible to hook the ball out of that rough, that thick. But he seemed to think it was.
He took on a shot that was it wasn't possible to hit.
Three times he took it on. And then the third time he said, if this one's out of bounds, I'm going to lay up.
It was poor at best. But there again, Bryson is the petulant child. If, you know, if it's not going his way, he just keep on going. Bit like, who was it? It was Thomas Bjorn. Remember that in...
Tin Cup?
No, Thomas Bjorn. Tin Cup. It was a Tin Cup incident, wasn't it? On the 17th in the K Club?
Yeah. Did he run out of balls?
Water.
The worst part was DeChambeau wanting to climb the fence to hit. How was he going to hit the shot if he climbed the fence?
But it wasn't a fence. Was it a fence? Who says it's a fence? It doesn't look like a fence to me. I think you'll find the exact specifications of a fence are this, and that is not a fence.
Yeah. It was very petulant. And when the worst bit was where he said to the rules officials, I don't believe that.
Yeah.
You know.
Can I get another opinion? But if you got to go back to the beginning of that sequence. So he hits it into the creek left, takes the drop. Now, beforehand, you're watching him and he's kind of swooshing the club around and, you know, is he kind of giving himself a bit of a deep? I don't know. Drops the ball and then he notices that his left foot is still in the hazard. So he calls over to Patrick Cantlay and says, hey, Patrick, am I okay doing this? And straight away, I was like, shouldn't you know this rule? I mean, you know, so long as the ball is there. And Jack Nicklaus, who was on the commentary at that moment, went, yeah, he's absolutely fine doing that. And there was a sense of like, even Jack was going, do you not know this rule? Anyway, and then as you said, so he hits the two out of bounds. He mentions during the argument, I think with the second official, he mentions that Phil Mickelson had a similar question earlier in the year. But it's such horseshit, frankly. Like, really, and you kind of say, okay, is he kind of in the moment? He's just got the red mist in his head, and he's just like, you know, because he went from what? From one over to six over? Like, I mean, like he basically just played himself out of the tournament. And the thing, it's not so much the petulance, whatever, you know, it's the sense of entitlement. Because he does say that as he walks away, he goes, I got another garbage ruling, as always. It's like, like, really? Like, is the PGA against you? It's like, there's a stride. It's that sense of youthful self-entitlement that I find, you know, is not a pleasant part of the DeChambeau persona. And, like, I mean, and even you were saying earlier, is this like that Nick Doherty and Andrew Coulthard were in studio and kind of edging around the, on the commentary, Nick Faldo, Jack Nicklaus, and is it not Jim Nantz, whoever the other one is. Like, they were doing everything but say, this little prick needs to stop doing what he's doing. They did everything but say that. Like, it was really clear. Faldo was horrified. And you're like, all right, whatever. And there's a thing of, like, I was thinking, it's like, it's a little moment. And as you said, Joe, had Mickelson done it, I think he probably would have been given more of a free pass. Not a free pass, but the criticism wouldn't have been as profound as it was on DeChambeau. But, like, he certainly didn't, he doesn't endear himself with the, and also know the rules, man, you know? Surely to God, you're the scientist. You're meant to know this stuff.
Just on that, I do think there is a tradition, Peter, you can probably weigh in on players, just, it's almost informing the other or just double checking, is this okay that I'm going to do that? I wasn't sure if it was a, hey, what's the rule here, Tom Brady style.
I think some players have this thing about when they're on camera that they'll bring a referee in so they can't get penalized for any mistakes.
Okay.
Once the referee is there and there's a mistake made, it's the referee's fault, not yours. So they'll always bring in a player. They'll always bring in a referee.
Okay, that's fair enough. So there's three aspects to it. One, there's the course management, and that was just shockingly bad. And if he plays like that in a major, he's going to get found out badly. Though Nicklaus made an interesting point whereby he says he's almost having to figure out how he plays the course now with this extra power. And even though you might be able to hit this green with your newfound power, doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. And that was a typically short and sweet Jack Nicklaus, pure common sense, brilliant insight.
Yeah.
So there's the lack of strategy is one, which I just think is, you know, for that's, it's interesting. Like, that is the tournament, in fairness to DeChambeau, to play around with this stuff. What is possible out of the rough? I have no problem with that. And okay, it's comical when he does it with two and three, and it's embarrassing. But I think good on you. Like, you're pushing the bounds here. Because maybe very soon everybody's going to be hooking at 240 yards out of the rough. And I've no problem with him doing that in a tournament he's unlikely to win anyway. So I thought, ignore everyone, ignore all the headlines. You made a 10, it's a bit embarrassing, but I thought that was brilliant. I was like, go for it again, why not? But don't do it when it really counts. Secondly, there's the anger, the red mist, the you know, I give him a bit of a pass for that as well, because I think it's amazing golfers don't get angrier more often. Like, they're the only sports people where you're not allowed to be angry. Like, basically everywhere, every other sports person can get angry and lose the plot. Maybe tennis a little bit, but I think it's, you know, John Ram banging his club, all that stuff, that's normal. The third thing though, Fionn, you mentioned, where is the self-entitlement. And it's the prissy nature with the rules, guys. It's the, I get another garbage ruling. It's the doing the interview about the cameraman 2 hours later and having to go with the cameraman. It's on that third point, part of me's like, Bryson, I want to defend so much of what you're doing. I can't defend that point.
That would be exactly how I would feel. Yeah, it's the self-entitlement. He's not alone in this. You know, these are the shiny young emperors of the game. You know, they come in, they're cosseted, they're told. And you know, DeChambeau is, I would wager, DeChambeau is no different to 100 other guys playing in the PGA Tour. He just happens to be the focus of a lot of attention because he's playing particularly well. And but it's not an attractive quality to watch someone reveal their sense of entitlement. You know, the cleverer golfer keeps it hidden, you know, it gets a little cuter about it, maybe.
Yeah.
Did anybody listen to, just on a different point there, anybody listen to Jack Nicklaus on Jordan Spieth.
Oh, here we go.
He was asked about Jordan Spieth.
Did he agree with you by chance?
Kind of ish.
All right.
Well, I think we're done with DeChambeau now anyway, so we can
That's what I said. I was just thought we'd switch the anyway. Look, Jordan finished tied for 11th last week, which is, you know, good comeback. And he is getting better, I have to admit. But anyway, Nicholas was asked about Jordan, and he stated the fact that, you know, he's an unbelievable putter, but his game wasn't that, all of that. But since he's gone through what he's gone through over the last, say, 2 years, and swing changes and stuff like that, he has improved. And Nicholas reckoned that he would be back in that winner's circle soon enough again.
Well, here's hoping. Can we just have another example of why golf is the mentalist game ever invented by a sadist to make other people suffer, is what happened to Dustin Johnson, who goes from winning the Travelers to being dead last. Like, I mean, dead last, not just...
Was wondrous, though. Like, it's a shame Bryson totally overshadowed him, because never has the man given up like Dustin Johnson. he barely looks like he cares at the best of times.
Yeah.
This was... Really, if I finish 12 over, if I finish 25 over, what does it matter?
Two rounds.
He's in that terrible position where, because he's Dustin Johnson, it kind of does matter because every shot is being televised.
Mm.
Dustin Johnson's in a great position in that, what is he, probably world number three, four. Number four at the moment. Yeah. Obviously, we know how brilliant he is, major winner, wins every year on tour, all of that. Yet, nobody really cares passionately about him. He can sort of do what he wants. Like, as you say, imagine if Rory had two rounds of 80. We'd be having a two-hour retrospective. Peter would be saying some shocking things, and Rory'd never talk to us again. Like, we would literally have destroyed every part of his career. That this just sums up Rory McIlroy. Dustin Johnson does it. He'll probably win next week.
He's the favorite to win this week at the 3. He's the actual favorite.
It's incredible. It's actually
eighty.
Just
before you leave DeChambeau, one of my favorite parts of it was afterwards, where Jack was in the commentary box with Faldo, and it gets on to, oh, did you ever shoot 10 on a hole? And Jack is, I think I remember at an Open Championship once. Oh, I think, on a par 5, I think I hit a 10. And Faldo's, I think I might have had an 11 at one stage. They're going through and they're all. And then it came to whoever was, I think it was the commentator, who weirdly wouldn't admit that he's ever had a 10 on a hole. He's like, no, I think my worst ever was an 8 or a 9. I'm like, come on.
Yeah, Jack that's pretty good.
Just admitted he had a 10. And you're like, no. Nothing like that has ever. Trying to impress Jack and Nick. Dear God.
I do like a bit of Jack on commentary, I have to say.
He's great.
He really speaks so much sense about the game. There's such a weight to everything he says, even the fairly bland, obvious stuff. It just seems so rock solid true when he speaks. And he had COVID.
You can tell who he likes, is the other thing. So I think Spieth's comments are... You know, you can tell he's everything Jack wants in a player, and the way he conducts himself. And I'm sure when Jack writes him the letter, Spieth responds in the appropriate manner. Whereas Bryson, he's still looking at going, this guy.
The only thing that I find weird, a little bit grating, is the Mr. Nicholas. It's like, he's Jack. Call him Jack. Stop calling him Mr. Nicholas. It's like,
funnily enough, at the very end of Tom Watson last week, we mentioned this Open for the Ages that was on last Sunday, and I said, well, surely, Tom, it's going to come down to Nicholas against Tiger, you know, as who is the greatest Open champion, and who'll it be? And he's like, oh, Tiger, obviously.
Yeah.
Oh, did
he? Oh, sorry, because that's right, we had lost the thing. He said that at the end. Yeah. It'll be Tiger, obviously. Yeah.
Oof. In a way that, like, it's his personal opinion it should be Tiger, or like, that's what the modern day marketers will do.
No, and they, well, obviously.
Oh, good point. Yeah. And
interesting. Yeah.
And it was Jack. Sorry.
But we never recorded it, so Tom can deny that now if he wants.
That ever happened. Yeah.
There's the amount of interesting questions we asked when they
forget about this cutting stuff, Tom. Forget about this cutting. I want to get into the golf now.
Things he said about Phil Mickelson when we went off.
Yeah.
The Nicholas has had COVID. That came up in the broadcast as well. They're both okay.
Barbara
Asthmatic. Rory McIlroy. Rory McIlroy. Rory McIlroy. So Project Restart has not gone so well for him. They're into their seventh tournament this week. There was a kind of a very illuminating tweet from the Fried Egg. Rory hit this gorgeous 5-wood, 257 yards, which just like came straight down in the hole. It was like a sandwich. It was ridiculous. I retweeted it. A bunch of people did. It's just, you know, it takes out a 5-wood, 257 yards, and he can do anything he wants with it. And I think it finished up 8 feet from the hole. It was just glorious. So the Fried Egg then had some stats from that same round. So remember, 5-wood, 257 yards. He got it to 8 feet. On number 11, he had 95 yards. He missed the green. On number 17, 111 yards. Most of us would fancy it. He missed the green. On the first, 106 yards, he missed the green. And then on number 13, he had 98 yards. He got it to 20 feet. And from 66 yards on number 7, he got it to 40 feet. Again, 257 yards, 8 feet. It was very illuminating. I mean, how frustrating a round must that be if you're McIlroy? He had improved with the wedges of late massively, Nathan, but that's just like, are we back to this? Like, he seems to have those rounds which are just inexplicable.
It was the one thing I thought when I saw your tweet about like McIlroy being the best player with a wood in his hand at the game and by a country mile, and there's no more beautiful thing in golf than watching Rory hit that. But how often do you have to hit that shot? With the way modern golf has gone, how often are you standing on a fairway 257 yards to go? Like, rarely, if ever. You've hit a terrible, terrible, shocking tee shot if you do. So more likely, you're going to be in that range somewhere within 100. And if you're leaving yourself, like, that is the big question all the time when you look at Rory's putting stats. Is it that he's leaving himself a 20-footer when actually he only had a wedge in from 110 yards and he left himself a 20-footer instead of leaving himself a 10-footer? So, yeah, last week was just a nothing week for him in many ways. And when you go through those stats, it's easy to see why.
Yeah. Another nothing week, Peter.
I'm not surprised, but I am surprised in a way. He had Michael Bannon over to have a look at his golf swing. But maybe he's changed something. I didn't see any change, you know, that was standing out, but maybe there's a slight little change there that is kind of affecting his wedge play. You know, something that's small that he's put in there that he's not quite comfortable with. So that's all I could really say. But again, not really the type of golf course that suits him. But, you know, as I said before, as world number one, you got to be able to play every golf course. No matter where, you got to be able to play anywhere, anytime, if you're world number one.
Yeah, well, he could do with just recreating a bit of form, because suddenly, like, the major season's upon us very soon. Like, we're just a couple of weeks away from USPGA and we're up and running. With a view to this week, by the way, the British Masters kicking off at Galgorm Castle. I'm not totally a fan with Galgorm Castle. Lee Westwood seems
hosted to hosted by our friend of the pod, no. Lee Westwood.
Is that
no,
right?
No, it's gone close house.
Oh. I have that wrong then. Well,
started yesterday.
Started. I was wondering. Oh yeah, because Michael Campbell had a good round.
So yeah, so I was very surprised to see him in the field.
Is this a Wednesday to Saturday tournament?
Yeah,
this one is. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Michael Campbell got one of the golf's nicest men. I saw you and Murray tweet. Do you know him, Peter?
I do. Yeah. Michael has gone through the mill. He had pretty much packed in golf. And this is his first year back since 2015, maybe. So, wow. Great to see him back.
What part of his game deserted him?
I think it was more off the course than on the course,
okay.
To be honest with you. And then that kind of fed into his game and his love for golf disappeared.
Okay.
If I'm not incorrect, I think he applied for the director of golf in Portmarnock when that came up, or the pro in Portmarnock. So that's where his head was at. His head was at going to, you know, go to a golf course and stay there.
I would have thought Michael Campbell would have been fairly confident of getting that job. No?
I don't know. Jeez. I don't know.
But touch overqualified, I would have said.
Touch overqualified, yeah.
They're
I'm going to go, lads.
You got to go. Okay.
I'll leave you at it.
We're pretty much done. Nathan Murphy, good luck to you. They're in the midst of this 6-week run, by the way. So they're going to do Celtic Manor twice. They're going to do the Belfry. I guess it's good to have some European tour golf back. It's very English focused. But have you played, what's the name of this course?
Close House.
Sorry, I have Galgorm Castle for some reason.
Galgorm is, they play a Challenge Tour event there. They got the go ahead off the government to have the tournament. So that was only announced actually the other day, I think.
Okay.
Whether it's going to go ahead. It's actually a very, very good tournament, but I don't think spectators will be allowed in this year. But really nice golf course, lovely area. But Close House I've never played, but golf course is meant to be quite tough.
Okay. Well, I know Fionn, you've one or two quick bits to finish up on, but they're going to play Celtic Manor twice, the Belfry, and that's the next couple of weeks on the European Tour. This week on the PGA Tour, you'll be watching the 3 Open, formerly the 3M Open, formerly the 3M Championship. TPC Twin Cities, Arnold Palmer Design, just outside of Minneapolis. This is event number 7 of the restart. Seamus Power is in the field. That's the Irish interest. He did very well last time he played and really should have had top 10, so hopefully he goes well again. Matthew Wolfe is the defending champion. 21 under won it last year. He's missed 3 of 6 cuts since the restart. DeChambeau, Colin Morikawa finished 2nd to Wolf last year. And it would seem, looking at the favourites, Dustin Johnson, Tony Finau, Brooks Koepka, that this is probably a course you need to be long-ish on. I don't. And Matthew Wolf won last year. I don't overly remember that tournament, I have to say. So that's this week on the PGA Tour. Fionn, what else catching your eye?
Just a couple of things. Obviously, there's been so much focus these last few weeks on Bryson DeChambeau and the shit change in his body. But a pod listener, Matthew Collins, sent me a link to the PGA Tour Champions Instagram account, which has a before and after photograph of one Colin Montgomery, where in February of this year, he is a sizable man with carrying quite a lot of timber. And all of a sudden, photographed July 2020, he is as slim as they come. He's lost 40 pounds, apparently. And the transformation is remarkable. Now, we obviously have no idea what is, you know, is it exercise? Is it diet? Is it gastric band? Is it whatever the hell it is? But, oh, my God, if you look at the shift is incredible.
He looks great, yeah. Fair play to him.
Invariably, when you're a person of size and you lose an awful lot of weight at a certain age, it just makes you look like 30 years older, you know?
He did this before and his golf game went severely south.
Yeah. Well, you'd imagine it would, because all of a sudden, you know, you've got like these like skin just hanging off like a bone frame and probably struggling to make a good swing. The other thing I wanted just to highlight is that I don't know if you saw this thing. It was according to the New York Times, Donald Trump pressured the UK ambassador, or the American ambassador to the UK, Woody Johnson, who also owns the New York Jets, to put pressure on the British government to bring the Open Championship to Turnberry. And so Johnson's deputy, Lewis Lukens, was like, no, you can't be doing that. Like, that's just not. And one is like, there's obviously a massive ethical issue, is that you can't be using the office of the president for personal enrichment. And even besides that, it's just that, like, it's not the British government that determines the open rota, it's the RNA. And so the long and short of it is that Lewis Lukens has been fired. So I thought that was an interesting little tidbit. And, you know, because based on, this is the other part that you missed, Joe, from the Tom Watson interview that didn't get recorded.
Jeez, bloody hell. I sound like I missed the greatest 15 minutes ever with Tom.
Well, I asked him what his favorite courses on the open rota were.
And he said Turnberry.
He said Muirfield. And then he goes, have you played Turnberry? And he goes, Turnberry for him. He thinks since Trump bought it in 2014 and made the changes, he thinks that's the best course.
I really wanted to ask him, are you a Trump supporter? Right there and then.
But he is. No. But he makes no secret of it. He's a big Trump supporter. But anyway, but I thought that was an interesting one, is that Trump, allegedly, according to the New York Times, was pressuring his own ambassador to the UK to make sure that they can get the Open to Turnberry. And but the RNA are like, I mean, it's not scheduled to be a Turnberry for the next 4 years, but like it's on, it's always in consideration, isn't it?
So it's absolutely stunning by all accounts. And has produced good tournaments, but I think logistically it's a bit tough.
Those are the two little stories. And also as well, sorry, to go back one thing is that like, I know we worry about Rory. If you were a big Brooks Koepka fan, you'd be because
big time.
Things, he isn't right at all.
He's not right. And even watching that final round from Augusta last year, I mean, he's carrying at least 2 stone extra. He's not able to exercise the way he has been. And he said as much this week. He said the knee's still not right, although he's not blaming the knee. It was kind of a mixed message. Yeah. He said he got an MRI and nothing has changed, as in that implied this is not good.
Yeah.
But equally, he was saying, like, I'm not blaming the knee for the bad play. But yeah, he seems to be miles off at the moment.
Yeah. He does not look like a player
this year.
I was playing down in Mount Juliet on Friday. And actually, one of the cool things, it's kind of a cool moment. So maybe the gentleman in question is listening right now. Who knows? So I was in the car park in Mount Juliet getting changed. And there was a guy maybe 20 meters away. And he was getting changed as well. But he had a driver's seat door open and he was around at his boot doing bits and bobs. And what was blaring out of his car radio? Only Padraig Harrington on Golf Weekly.
Did he recognize you?
Oh, I was too far away. I'm sure he was there for Padraig Harrington, not me. Imagine walking over and going, see that what you're listening to? That's me. He'd be like, you're Padraig Harrington. So I was playing with someone who was under it doesn't work there, anything, but was like under the distinct impression or hope that the Irish Open might happen Ryder Cup week in September and that they might get it again the following year, you know, that they'd be willing to host it in September if they could get it again in the summer of 2021. That's complete hearsay, and it's not from somebody who works in Mount Juliet, but I guess maybe they know someone down there or whatever. Who knows? I don't know. What have you heard?
I have heard very little. I heard something similar to yourself, that they were discussing between Mount Juliet, but Mount Juliet wanted 2 years. They wanted this year and the following year. And then also I heard on the grapevine that without crowds, the old head would take it.
Oh, wow.
Just for TV and scenery and just players.
Wow. Amazing. That like has a Shell's Wonderful Life, Shell's Wonderful World of Golf.
Hello, yes. Friends.
Yes.
Hey, yeah. Golf friends. Yeah.
By the way, sorry, Peter.
But can you imagine the amount of provisional balls that would be hit down there?
And a bit of wind as well. It'd be nice. Yeah. Actually, if you're looking for some golf to watch, this popped up after watching the Masters thing last night. They have digitally remastered the 1963 at Pebble Beach, Nicholas versus Sam Snead, Shell's Wonderful World of Golf. And the quality of the picture is unbelievable. I mean, it's close to high def as you'll get. And it's Nicholas, who has just won the US Open in his first year on tour, against the older Sam Snead. And if you want to see Snead and Nicholas in action, it's brilliant. It's on YouTube. It's there to watch. It's free. It's totally worth checking out. It's really cool.
Did you guys see... So, sorry, just something that popped into my head that I wanted to mention earlier on. So Ram is number one. He's the third fastest player in the history of PGA to reach number one. So it took him 4 years and 27 days. And Spieth took 2 years and 245 days. But these are amazing. That's amazing to think that you can just come on tour. Tiger Woods, 290 days.
Yeah.
It's like, come here. And that's always thanks to Justin Ray, who was the never-ending source of amazing stats about golf. But like, it's like that just adds to the Tiger Woods catalog of absolutely mind-melting statistics. It's like 290 days to become number one golfer in the world.
Was that because his amateur performances counted?
Don't ruin it.
No, I'm asking the question because the world rankings are probably one of the most complicated set of statistics there ever has been. Mm. And they, a lot of people give out about them, I have to admit, you know, especially when you get to lower down from one. But I'm just wondering, did Tiger's performances in his amateur days count towards his points list?
Would that be the same then for Rams? Although, mind you, it's 4 years on, but Rams' amateur performances, I guess, probably wouldn't have the same impact on his on his standing today. I don't know, but it's, I guess it just speaks to that Tiger arrived, as they say, like a meteorite in Kansas, you know, he just kind of came and speaks is pretty impressive. Yeah.
Oh, I hope he comes back. Come on, Jordan.
So do I. I know.
So fellas, we'll leave it there. Great stuff. Thanks, Mill. Enjoy the 3M Open. And thanks. We will chat next week. Thanks to
Tony Fenu, by the way, is my pick.
Well, do you know, Tony needs to start winning.
This is his time.
Tony's 30. He's still playing like a 22-year-old, and it's going to come, but like, this is it. Okay. Peter Laurie says, Tony Finau after tipping the world number one to win the tournament last week.
No, there
you go. I'm joking. It's a bit harsh. It was a good call.
It was a good call.
All right. Great stuff, fellas. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks very much.
Missing this?
I remember Ollie text me Solskjaer. One or two people would get hold of my number, unfortunately, and he would text me.
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.